Hack the Entrepreneur is part of Rainmaker FM, the digital business podcast network. Find more great shows and education at rainmaker.fm. Selection, speed, and creativity are just a few of the benefits of having several designers work on your project. Start your next project at 99designs.com/hack and get a $99 upgrade of services free.
Welcome to Hack the Entrepreneur, the show which reveals the fears, habits, and inner battles behind big-name entrepreneurs and those on their way to joining them. Now here is your host, John Naster.
Hey, welcome back to another episode of Hack the Entrepreneur. I am so glad you decided to join me again today. I am your host, John Naster, but you can call me Johnny. My guest today is the co-founder and CEO of Ground Metrics, a unique technology startup in the oil and gas exploration industry. He began his career in business management and was a strategic marketing consultant. He then co-founded and ran Carcode Corporation, which was acquired by a major toll road management company in 2009. In 2012, my guest won the Gold Award at the World's Best Technology Competition and the San Diego Venture Group's Business Plan and Quick Pitch Competition awarded him second place. Now, let's hack George Eiskamp. I want to take a moment to thank today's sponsor, 99designs, the best place for new businesses to build their brands. If you're wondering how your small business can stand out in today's increasingly competitive marketplace, I've got one word for you: branding. While building a brand may be easier and more affordable than you imagined, it still does require some time and money. So why is it worth the effort? Because it allows you to stand out from all the rest of the businesses out there. When customers have many, many choices, branding helps them make a decision. Your brand should highlight your unique virtues and let customers know what they can expect from your small business. Whether you need a logo to launch your brand, a t-shirt to show it off, or a website to bring it online, 99designs is a great place to build your brand. Visit 99designs.com/hack and get a $99 upgrade of services for free. That's 99designs.com/hack to get your free $99 upgrade. Welcome back to another episode of Hack the Entrepreneur. I am very excited for this guest. George, welcome to the show.
Thank you, John. It's a pleasure to be here.
Absolutely my pleasure. All right, George, we're going to jump straight into this. George, can you tell me, as an entrepreneur, what is the one thing that you do that you feel has been the biggest contributor to your successes so far?
I think I'm just an avid learner. So there's so much to do, especially in the early stage when I've had one or two or three of us trying to do it all. I've typically teamed with technical people. So, you know, my co-founders will run the technical side, and then I run everything else. And so I've just had to learn the A to Z on running a business, and then through on-the-job training, understand the technical side well enough that I can build and manage the company so it's symbiotic with our technologies.
Nice. So you do know enough of the technical, enough to be dangerous, as they say. So you at least get an idea of what the technical side is and what they're talking about. Do you think that that's kind of necessary to know? Like, because now you are not only just the co-founder, right? You're CEO. So, I mean, as overseeing the whole thing, do you think it's necessary to kind of know all aspects of your business, at least somewhat?
Absolutely. I think that I've been much more effective by having done everything in the early stage. I understand the accounting better. I understand the HR better. I understand these aspects of business that are not in my area of expertise. So as we've grown and we've hired accountants and somebody else to do multiple things, including HR, we're much more efficient because I have a base of understanding for what they're doing. And on the technical side, that's magnified greatly. I think for my businesses, it's been a combination of hardware, software, and hardcore science. So it's super technical. So I've had to become very versed in the technology because the sale is highly technical. And in the early days, I was largely leading the sales efforts. And then it becomes fundraising. I have to be able to speak to it. I have to understand it technically well enough that when I answer questions from investors, I'm not accidentally misrepresenting things. And then when they bring in their technical folks, I try to buffer the rest of my team as much as possible. So the more I can answer on the technical front, the more I can keep my other guys focused on the technical side. So it's been more than just enough to be dangerous. I've got in shoulder deep on the technical side.
Nice. And what, just from the outside, it looks like you've entered, I mean, a very, very massive and serious market, right? I would think a very entrenched sort of market, like the oil industry. And like, what would bring you to something and just be like, I'm taking that challenge. That is for me. Not, I'm going to go into just software. I'm going to go into something where it's manageable and I can, you know what I mean? It's a big wall you're up against, and I love the boldness of it. I love that you are doing it successfully and that you've even just stepped up to do this.
This falls into the category, I think, of just being blissfully naive. I didn't know what I was, the size of the bite I was taking out of the apple when I jumped into this. And it's sort of been a trend, I think, in the industry. We started off with non-oil and gas people, and technologically, we set out to do things that people in industry believe to be impossible. They're things that have been attempted for 20, 30 plus years. And so people had stopped even trying to innovate in some of these areas because it was so ingrained in their understanding of what's possible that it wasn't worth the effort. So I got a couple tech guys together that didn't know it was impossible, and they figured it out. So the business model, there's like stories. So it's sort of been a theme with the company, and it starts with just taking on the challenge, like you said, and not knowing how hard it would be to wedge ourselves into this space.
Blissfully naive. I love that. I love that. So right now it seems like you are obviously in a business that is looking to make a big difference, but let's go back to when this began for you, because there seems to be a time when everybody sort of, either you realize it at the time or else you realize it looking back, but in every entrepreneur's life, when they realize that they do want to make this big difference in the world, or they find that they simply just can't just work for somebody else and work a day job and they want the pressures of this. So could you tell me which side of the fence you fall on and when you discovered this about yourself?
It was definitely the latter. During graduate school, getting my international business management degree, I did some internships with some big companies. I thought at the time I wanted to get into banking. So I did an internship with Wells Fargo Business Banking, and I did an internship with the Export-Import Bank of the U.S. in Washington, D.C. And they're so big, they have to compartmentalize something to such great degrees that when you're doing entry-level work and especially internship-level work, there's a very narrow scope of things that I was working on in those places. And initially, it was great because I was learning. And after the first month, after I'd learned what I was doing, it became very boring. And I looked around and saw in the company, it isn't just entry-level, but it's some number of years before the people I was viewing scope really expanded much. And so I think that at that point, I realized I had to figure something out different, and I didn't know what it was going to be. And serendipitous timing, I read a book, Rich Dad, Poor Dad, that talks about the value of creating value rather than just, you know, working a day job. And a group of us went to lunch with a marketing teacher. And a number of the other, my peers' questions were centered around, how do we get a job when we don't have experience, but then they want experience, you know, the chicken before the egg when you're coming out of school. And his advice was, do something new that nobody's done, and therefore there's nobody out there that has experience, and then very quickly you'll become the expert.
Wow. So I love it. That was not the answer I was expecting. Rich Dad, Poor Dad made that monumental sort of change in you. That's awesome. And
yeah. It was the combination of being experiencing the big company feel and that book and those words of wisdom from that teacher. All it sort of happened kind of right at the same time. And it just became obvious what I wanted to do.
That's awesome. And I've now interviewed over 100 people. And as much as we want to say that banking doesn't like breed innovation, the amount of entrepreneurs that are doing amazing things that have started or thought of going into banking after school, but then just like, no, I can't do this. I need to go. It's amazing. Banking really does cause innovation, I think, inadvertently.
All right. Well, there's certainly value there.
Yeah, that's so funny. It's like, I'm going to start making that argument to people that banking is all about innovation.
I mean, I would add it certainly is. If you get into it and you see all of these complex and intricate financial tools and the way they bundle things to diversify risk, you've got to be innovative to have come up with a million different ways to bundle an asset.
It's true. It's really impressive, actually, when you think of it that way. We see it as the big, slow-moving, you know, the big bank, but you're right. There is brilliant people behind the scenes figuring out how to do that stuff.
Well, that's a good point. And maybe what it is just the slowest moving innovation one has ever seen, but innovation nonetheless.
That's true. All right, George. So every blog post now, every expert talks about the 80-20 rule. I'm sure you've heard of this. Do 20% of the work, get 80% of the results. Do what you're good at, delegate the rest. You told us that you're an avid learner, especially in the early stages. You kind of have figured out a little bit of everything. But can you tell me something in your business that you are absolutely not good at?
Oh, I mean, yes. I'm not good at most things our business does.
But in your part of the business, is there something that you maybe like didn't admit to yourself that you weren't good at long enough, and then you finally had to just like, I gotta like delegate this out because I'm kind of getting in my own way?
Yeah, so I thought I was very creative at structuring deals to get past the nose, right? To knock down hurdles to get deals done, early stage sort of sales stuff. And I hired a guy who is way better than me. So now I struggle. Am I really good at that? And he's just phenomenal? Or am I not as good as I thought I was at it? So yeah, that might be an example.
That's an excellent example. I love that because there's always things that we think we're good at, right? And then it's hard to let go of sometimes. So that's cool. All right, let's move to projects. And this is going to be interesting for me because, I mean, you have like board of directors, you have a big company behind you at this point. So projects can be anything, any sort of pivot you have to make or any new sort of project you guys want to take on. Is there a process now that you guys go through or that you go through to decide whether GroundMetrics should move in a certain direction?
Yeah, we're making these sort of decisions on a weekly basis probably. And it's just staying true and disciplined to our focus. I always think back when we're making these decisions, I think a guiding principle I have comes from, I'm probably going to butcher his name, but Guy Kawasaki from The Art of the Start.
Yes.
Talks about creating your not to-do list. And I just always bring it back to how Project X is going to advance our mission of the business right now, sales, growing the company. How is this going to advance it? And so we look at it and we say, is this synergistic with our core business right now? How long will it take? How much will it cost? What will we not be doing if we decide to do this? And what I've found, and I often say to my senior managers, because this will turn into research projects for people, and generally people would just like to have an answer, and instead I give them research projects and there'll be some debate, and I'll often say, and they, you know, sort of repeat it now sometimes, is the answer will be in the data.
Nice. That's a great way of doing it. And yeah, and Guy Kawasaki, you did not butcher his name. He was actually on the show last week. and he was awesome. Great. Yeah. So that's great. And I love how you have to think of like the what will we not be doing. I'm assuming you mean that as in like an opportunity cost, right? You are giving up something to do something else. I'm assuming that's how you were referring to that.
Yeah, I think that it's okay. Maybe, but I'll restate it just to make sure. There's a lot of great things my company could be doing. There's a lot of great things I could be doing on a daily basis, weekly basis, whatever the time frame is. But I can't do all those great things. So I've got to take the list of all the great things that, quote, we should be doing, and instead say, what's the most important thing to actually get completed? And pick from that list and focus on completing it. And then don't do those other great things if they're going to prevent you from completing the most important things.
Nice. That is great clarification. I like that. So really, I mean, keeping focus, right? Keeping focus on what it is you have to get done at this point, or what it is Ground Metrics needs you to get done.
Right. Yes.
And not try and do 20 things at once, because then nothing gets done.
Right.
All right. So CEO of this company now, you have directors and you have other people that help make decisions, but still you're the CEO. So a lot of it goes to you. And as human beings, as entrepreneurs, though, and as a CEO, still one of our greatest struggles is that fear of being wrong, making a mistake, and sending our company in a direction that doesn't go as we had planned. George, could you walk me through how to be wrong within your business?
Move fast, be wrong fast. The faster I know I'm wrong, the sooner I know I'm wrong, then the faster I can correct and get on the right track. So we parallel path everything. We have a bias to action. I am excessively forgiven for mistakes that happen as a bias to action. We narrow down the scope of anything we're doing. If somebody wants to get approval to do the next improvement on some widget we have, we cut out everything we don't absolutely need. I want progress on the timescale of weeks. I want to know in a week. I want some information a week from now that's going to tell me if we think blank might work in this widget. And so that's how we're wrong. We're wrong all the time. We find out fast. We adjust. Lots of times it's a 1 or 2 degree sort of adjustment. Sometimes we're back to the drawing board. But the faster we find out, the better off we are.
Yeah. Excellent. A bias towards action. That's good. That's how to do it. I mean, and then it keeps, I guess, the errors or the pivots to be sort of, I guess, more incremental rather than massive and catastrophic.
It does. And I think in our business, it's isn't just the way we came up with this as being a core tenet in our organization. I think a lot of the things we innovate are based here, you know, for me and our company here are based on the needs that we have at the time. So I mentioned we're hardware, software, hardcore science, we're even big data now, and lots of highly educated engineers and scientists through their training and self-selection and go down that path end up becoming very analytical and they want to get it right. If you're going to build a bridge, that bridge better not fall down. And so they really want to cross their T's and dot their I's. So we had to generate culture that would say you can design the bridge without building it yet, right? You can design some simplistic version and do some parameter testing on it to see if it might fall down, to get a sense of what the cost might be to build it without doing the full up job, and just move fast and get the little pieces done. And for us to move fast, we really had to embrace a bias to action, screen for it, nurture it, because in this space, there's such an overwhelming gravity to move slowly as a function of perfectionism and analysis paralysis sort of things.
Yeah, you just wouldn't have done well in banking. I could just tell you just love the fast movement, you love the pace, you love how you can take action now on ideas rather than, well, let's talk about it for a year. So this has been a lot of fun, and we're going to wrap up on something I'm calling the entrepreneurial gap. So from graduate school to possibly banking to rich dad, poor dad, to all the way through now to Ground Metrics, you've done a lot of things. Yet as entrepreneurs, we constantly are looking forward, right? Setting goals 1 month, 3 months, 6 months, a year, 3 years, 5 years, 10 years out. And everything I'll be more successful when my business gets there in a month or in 6 months or in a year or when we land this deal. And we have to do this. We have to push forward. I agree fully. But I find that sometimes we fail to stop and turn around and see what it is we have done, what we've accomplished and learned. So, George, I would love right now if you would stop, turn around, look back from graduate school to now where you are, and just tell me how you feel about everything you've accomplished.
I've got great pride in it. Everything, I've been very strategic from the beginning. I wanted to get to a certain place, and I plotted the course to get here. And there were some turns in the road, but I was always able to get back on track. So back when I had that discovery of wanting to do something like this through, you know, the book and such, I'm here. I made it happen, and it's been through the Great Recession, all the challenges with startups and with partners and everything, the school of hard knocks. And here I am running a company that's making a real difference and excelling beautifully. So career-wise, I couldn't be more proud.
That's awesome. You absolutely, absolutely should be. And so, George, we've got to speak about your business in passing. Could you specifically tell the listener where to find out more about your business and then also where they can find out more about you?
www.groundmetrics.com. There's a blog on there. There's an About Us section on there, which includes a mini bio of me and the rest of our team. Also, for more on me, on LinkedIn. So George Eiskamp, easy enough to look up on LinkedIn.
Excellent. And Ground Metrics is on Twitter, I believe, too, right?
I'm probably the least technical person in a high-tech company in the world. I might have to ask you what Twitter is.
Okay. I was just looking on your Twitter, so you are on Twitter.
Right. I think we're on Twitter and Facebook and LinkedIn and maybe some of the others.
Excellent.
I don't know them all.
Yeah. So groundmetrics.com, groundmetrics on Twitter, the Guy Kawasaki episode, since we just talked about it, and George's LinkedIn profile will all be linked in the show notes. So they're very, very easy for you to find. And George, thank you again so much for taking the time to stop by and chat with me today. And just please keep doing what you're doing because it really is awesome and inspiring to watch.
Well, this is fun. Thanks again for having me.
My pleasure.
Cheers.
George, thank you so much for joining me. And thank you for the really engaging conversation. I really enjoyed that. And I do need to just thank Elliot Pepper. Elliot was on, he's a really smart entrepreneur himself. And he's from San Francisco, San Diego, something in there. And he was on my show around episode 40 or so. But Elliot introduced me to George and got George on the show. And I'm so thankful for Elliot for doing that. So thank you. So I go back through this conversation and there was a lot of stuff said. George has taken on a massive project. The oil and gas industry is not a small industry to get into. I mean, it makes, when I talk about like making a WordPress plugin or a podcast, it seems small. And compared to that, it's a big, massive, entrenched industry to take in. To take on the way George has, and I appreciate that he's done that. And so he said a lot of really, really smart things that really stuck out to me during the conversation. But he said one thing. He did. He said that one thing that just keeps coming back to me and back to me and back to me. Did you get it? Did you hear it? Let's do it. Let's find the hack.
There's a lot of great things my company could be doing. There's a lot of great things I could be doing on a daily basis, weekly basis, whatever the time frame is. But I can't do all those great things. So I've got to take the list of all the great things that, quote, we should be doing, and instead say, what's the most important thing to actually get completed? And pick from that list and focus on completing it, and then don't do those other great things if they're going to prevent you from completing the most important things.
And that's the hack. George. So very well said. This is it. This is the hack. If there's a hack of hacks, this is how businesses get built. This is how things get done. We all have tons of things we could be doing. We all have tons of things our businesses could be doing. But there's usually one thing that has to be done, one thing that we should be doing, one thing that we just need to do right now because it's the most important thing. It's that ability to figure out what the most important thing, and maybe it's not going to be one thing each day even. I mean, you might have to do 10 things today, but you have to prioritize and be like, this is number one, this is number two, this is number three, and don't try and do one, two, three, four, five all at the same time, and then nothing gets done, and you end up wasting time on Twitter. Although I don't know if you can waste time on Twitter. Twitter's pretty awesome, but you know what I mean? And this is really, really important. And it's not just important when you have a big business or like something going on. Even if you're just getting started yourself, you have to figure this out. I use Momentum app. If you've never tried this, it's completely free. If you use Chrome or whatever browser you use, just Google Momentum app. It's this free thing. It becomes your homepage. Every time you open up a browser window or tab, it will come up and it will just say good morning or good evening or good afternoon, whatever it happens to be, time of the day. And it'll say your name because you type it in and you type in the one thing you have to do next. Then every time you try and go to Facebook or go to another page, it reminds you that you have to do this thing. If you can even just do that one thing each day that moves you closer to where you want to be, you will get amazing compound effects on this. This is something I had to do years ago to get started in business. I made a conscious effort to do something to move me forward to making a sale every single day. And it seems like nothing happens for a couple months and then it starts to compound. It's the beauty of compound interest. But this compound effect of doing this one thing every day will cause you to have immense change in your business and massive amounts of success and just cool things will happen, whatever success happens to be for you. But George, thank you so much because I really, really, truly appreciate you hitting that point because it is so key. And it seemed obvious to me that you would do that because you wouldn't be where you were without having that. But I'm really, really glad that you mentioned it. All right. So that was a lot of fun. I thank you for listening. And I thank George again for joining me. It has been a lot of fun, and I appreciate you stopping by each and every time. I truly do. I know there are a lot of options, so thank you so very much. If you are super, super inclined to just help out right now and you haven't yet, for the hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people around the world that have, I truly, truly appreciate it. But an iTunes review would help me and the show so much. Hacktheentrepreneur.com/iTunes will take you right there. If you type it in your phone, it'll bring up the app with it available, or just go online and type that right in, hacktheentrepreneur.com/iTunes, and that takes you straight there. Leave me a review. I would absolutely love it. And if you can leave a Twitter, if you're on Twitter, you're at your name in the review somewhere, I can go on Twitter and thank you personally. I would love to be able to do that. So thank you again so much. I really, 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 truly do appreciate it. And please, until next time, keep hacking the entrepreneur.